那一耳旁。神马神马神马神马。
Shalom, shalom, and Boker Tov to all of you. Good morning. This is the Radio Rabbi program, and I am your radio rabbi, Rabbi Barbara Aiello. And it is so very nice to have you with us this morning. If you're a longtime listener, thank you for sticking with us over these 15 years. And if you've just found us, welcome. We're here every Sunday morning on AM 930 The Answer. And, of course, we're also on your FM stations, 103.1 and 93.7. But I know a lot of you like to listen on your computer. Just go to my website, rabbibarbara.com, scroll down to the microphone, the radio rabbi icon, and click on there and you can listen live stream or a podcast throughout the week. Anytime that you'd like to listen to one of our shows, you can do that as well. And we are very, very grateful. We say good morning and Boker Tov to all of our good friends in the Tampa Bay area, people throughout Europe who listen to the show, Marion in Ukraine, Asia, our friends in Singapore, and we've got Kim in Australia. Thank you for joining with us as well. And we know that our Christian friends who are on their way to church listen in, as well as those coming home from the early service, we always like to make a nice thank you and a shout out to all of you for your consistent support of the State of Israel. It's so very, very important. We spend a lot of time here talking about Good News Israel. Michael Ordman is a frequent guest, and he's always so good to have. If you didn't hear that program, just look into our archive, and you'll get a chance to hear Michael. And also, we talk a little bit about some of the negative publicity, and we try to correct it too. So we appreciate all of the support for Israel, especially among the Christian community. But nobody would be hearing any of our guests, our wonderful music, or any of some of our special features if it weren't for Mr. Bill. Hi, Mr. Bill.
I have theme music now. Good morning, Rabbi, and good day, Kim.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. And so I am here on the mountain in Sarastretta, which we're having a very mild summer. How's Tampa doing these days?
Well, I don't want to sound cliche and redundant, but it's hot.
It's hot, but it's nice, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The showers cool it off every afternoon like clockwork.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for all you do. And also, we thank Sleep King of Sarasota, our charter sponsor for 15 years. And we'll talk a little bit about what's happening over at Sleep King and give you some heads up on some specials they're having as well. Today is July 23rd, 2017. On the Hebrew calendar, however, it is the 29th day in the Hebrew month of Tammuz in the year 5777. So another month is coming to the close, and Rosh Chodesh is coming up. Rosh Chodesh is the little festival that highlights the first of the year, the first of the month, the beginning of the new month. And we have the new year coming up as well. As I said to you, we are broadcasting to you from Sarastretta, which is a tiny little village on the mountains of Calabria in the toe of the Italian boot. And we'll be remembering today the Jewish Day of Remembrance, Tisha B'Av. We'll tell you a little bit about it, and we'll also kind of celebrate the memory of Theodor Bekel. He was our Tevye, our fiddler on the roof. No actor played the part more times than did Theodor, who passed away several years ago at the age of 91. You may not know that he originated the role of Captain Von Trapp in The Sound of Music, and there was a beautiful song that was written just for him. And as we observe Theodor Bekel's yard site, may he rest in peace, may his memory be forever for a blessing. And I hope you enjoy Theodor Bekel and Edelweiss.
We were in Boston, and we had already been out for at least 10 weeks, if not more. And you know, we were still futzing around with bits and pieces in the show. Rodgers and Hammerstein decided that there was something lacking in the score, and had to do with the fact that I was in the cast.
And could play the guitar.
So they said, we got to write him something. It was Edelweiss. And it was the last thing that Oscar Hammerstein ever put lyrics to.
Edelweiss. Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever. Edelweiss, Edelweiss, bless my homeland forever.
And that was Theodore Bucknell singing Edelweiss. And we observe his yard site this week as we remember him most of all as Tevye, the milkman from Fiddler on the Roof. But he was the very first. He was the very first Captain Von Trapp in the Sound of Music right here on the Radio Rabbi program. Well, this coming week, we start a brand new book of the Torah, Devarim. And so we're going to talk a little Torah talk this morning. Devarim is, as we've often said, is made, the Torah is made up of the five books of Moses. In English is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Those are English words with a Greek extraction, some of them. The Hebrew names, however, are Bereshit, Shemot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Devarim. And the Hebrew titles of each book come from a word or a phrase in the very first verse of the new book. So we find ourselves now at the end of the Torah, rolled all the way now to the right, and just a little bit left on the left, to the last book of the five, which is Devarim, which means the words. The English word for this book, as we said, is Deuteronomy. It translates to mean repetition of the laws. And here we find Moses' last sermons, where he goes over or repeats all of those things out of everything that he said that are the important issues that Moses feels need to be repeated, and about which the Israelites need to be reminded. One of my friends calls this book Devarim, Moses' Cliff Notes, mainly because each parsha is a short summary of what had been a longer discussion found earlier in the Torah. In Devarim, we find that Moses opens his remarks with a look back on the years that began with the revelation at Mount Sinai. Moses reminds us that he could not lead us without help. So he says in the first chapter, in the 13th verse, pick from each of your tribes people who are wise, insightful, and seasoned. Wise, insightful, and seasoned. But no, how do you choose? How do you determine just who is the wise one? Who is the insightful one? And who is the seasoned one? Well, maybe that's a little easier. But how do we choose? And just exactly what is wisdom? Is wisdom good judgment or good common sense? Or is it both? And then, how do we get it? And when we do get it, how do we know we have it? Important questions, especially today when judges on our Supreme Court have been involved in some of the most contentious issues of our times. We might assume that Supreme Court or even local court decisions are modern concerns, but that's not so. They go all the way back to Torah times. It's amazing how thousands of years ago, Moses describes the characteristics of these wise people. What are they? Well, they hear our people and decide justly between them, Israelites, or strangers. I command them to be impartial in judgment, hearing out low and high alike. I told them to fear no person in rendering a judgment, because judgment is God's. The Midrash, or a story which explains the Torah, which is associated with this portion, Devarim, goes even farther to give us an idea of how a person of wisdom behaves. And this is the story that the Midrash tells. In the Babylonian Talmud, we read that Samuel, a revered scholar and judge, was crossing a stream on a tiny, narrow, what wasn't even a bridge, it was a plank. A stranger was watching how difficult it was for the rabbi to put one foot in front of the other and to balance on this plank. And the stranger thought, this rabbi could use some help. So he waded into the stream, he reached out his hand, and he carefully guided the rabbi to the other side. The rabbi was very grateful, and before they parted, he asked the man his name. Well, when the rabbi heard the name, he stopped short. Immediately, Samuel realized that this was the very man who was scheduled to appear before him in a judgment in a property case. Touching him on the shoulder, Samuel said, "Friend, I cannot tell you how grateful I am for your help, but I must be honest with you. By your kind favor, you have disqualified me as the judge in your dispute." Favors, our sages tell us, even an innocent kindness like the one we hear about in this story, must not be accepted by those who are making judgments. The Talmud tells us that in order for us to make wise judgments, our integrity must be beyond reproach. How else do wise ones behave? Well, what do? The Midrash continues. A fool and a sage both have 7 traits. 1, the wise never speak before the wiser. 2, they do not interrupt their companions. 3, they are not afraid to reply, and they ask to the point and they reply on that topic only. They speak of first things first and of last things last. If they have not heard, they say, "I have not heard." If they have not understood, then they say, "I didn't understand that." They acknowledge the truth. Now for the fool, the reverse is true for them. As a rabbi, I've had the opportunity to experience judgment firsthand. Over the years, I've been the part of a Beit Din experience, and that is, I've been one of 3 rabbis on a panel of 3 charged with the responsibility of examining candidates who want to become Jews by choice to see if they have enough of an understanding of the Jewish religion for them to become practicing Jews. Each experience, both here in Italy and in the U.S., has been awesome. Sometimes I share the Beit Din with 2 other rabbis and sometimes with what we call learned Jews, congregants who have been active in their Jewish communities and who have taken time to learn about their religion. These 3 wise people were charged with the responsibility of listening well and, based on what they heard, rendering a judgment. Each time I've been part of a Beit Din, I noticed that each judge worked hard to apply these basic Jewish principles. We took it all very seriously. We worked from a list of 40 detailed questions, and from that list, we selected ones that, when it was our turn, we wanted to ask. When we asked our questions, we let the participant take as long as was necessary to respond. We didn't interrupt. When we weren't sure what we heard, we asked again. And when one of us responded to an answer given by one of our candidates, we kept his response to the point of the question. Then, when someone answered well, we did as the Midrash states. We praised them for their study. We acknowledged the truth. As judges, in our Jewish tradition, we try to put into practice what we know to be the basic behavior of people with wisdom. How about listening to Devarim Hayim? Our artist is Beth Schaefer. The CD is Lev Balev. Devarim Hayim, Words of Our Lives.
What road do I take? Looking for a source for some answers to be there if I make a mistake? Well, the answer's been sitting quietly behind those beautiful doors. Its story reaches out to me, stirs me up right to my core. Devarim Chayim, words of our lives, make our lives better with each and every letter. Devarim Chayim. Lives are a lesson unfolding in turmoil, helping us to reach higher ground. So the answer's been sitting quietly behind those beautiful doors. Their story reaches out to me, stirs me up right to my core. Devarim Chayim, words of our lives, make our lives better with each and every letter. Devarim Chayim, words of our lives.
Devarim Chayim, words of our lives. Where do we find them? In the Torah. And this is the Radio Rabbi program. That was Beth Schaefer, by the way, the CD Lev Belev, one of our favorite recording artists right here on the Radio Rabbi program. I'm your Radio Rabbi, Rabbi Barbara Aiello, and this is AM 930, The Answer. Thank you so much for being with us today. We have a little Torah talk. We're going to continue as we talk about the upcoming book of the Torah this coming week, read the last book of the Torah, as we approach the High Holy Day season, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And the Torah is rolled all the way nice, and, you know, it's all thick on the right side and thin on the left as we get to the end of the Torah scroll. And we're talking about Moses and a little bit about some of his final words to everyone before they reach the promised land. And we are talking also about wisdom, how to apply it. And when we are asked to give an opinion, render a judgment, how do we do it? And we'll go back to that midrash, because what's missing from the discussion is as important as what's there. And I'm just going to take a look back here for just a moment and talk about those principles that were so very, very important. The wise never speak before the wiser. They do not interrupt their companions. They are not afraid to reply. They ask to the point, and they reply on that topic only. They speak of first things first and last things last. If they have not heard, they say, I have not heard. If they have not understood, they say, I didn't understand that. They acknowledge the truth. And for the fool, the reverse is true. But what's missing? Well, when I read that list, it occurs to me that the personality of the judge, the list of credentials, the wise person's resume, it's just not there. There is nothing in this midrash list to indicate that when we are trying to help people solve a problem, arrive at a conclusion, or make a change for the better, we, as the wise ones, should use our position as an opportunity to toot our own horns. Who we are, how prominent we are, how much we know, where we studied, how long we studied, it's just not there. Pride, arrogance, and ego are just not part of the wise person's repertoire. And what's more important is that the emphasis of the Jewish tradition upon hearing and judging disputes justly is not only for the judges. These guidelines also apply to anyone who helps another person solve a problem. Could be friends, couples, parents, children, business partners, colleagues, students, teammates, anyone who ever had to deal with another person's difference of opinion. Well, what does that mean to me? Well, I can tell you this. As a teacher, I never got anywhere saying things like, I'm the teacher. I went to school for a long time to become one I know best. Or, I don't care who started it or what you two think. I'll be the one to decide what to do. Or as a counselor, it never worked to say something like, look at all the degrees on my wall. Clearly I know something about problems like yours. Just be quiet and let me tell you what to do. Or maybe the worst one of all, and I'm embarrassed to say, and Moses would be horrified, if we get too busy or too bound up with our own issues, spouting off something like, you know, I don't have time for this, or I just don't want to hear it. No, those are not the characteristics of a wise person. But the good news is that Torah can guide us as we walk the path of wisdom. If I am willing, I can keep my ego out of the problem-solving process. I can work at listening with an open mind. I can let people talk without interrupting them, without interjecting things designed to make me look good. And I can worry less about how I come across and pay more attention to the people in front of me who need my help. Now, these are things I can do not only as a rabbi, but as a mother, a spouse, a counselor, a citizen, a friend, a participant in the human race. And if I am willing, well, if we are willing, we can grow in judgment, discernment, wisdom, and good common sense. This is the Radio Rabbi's Torah Talk today. Yes, indeed. I am your radio rabbi, Rabbi Barbara Ayala, starting a brand new book of the Bible, of the Torah, this coming week, Devarim. Well, I've had the pleasure of officiating at some wonderful interfaith weddings between a Jewish spouse and a Catholic spouse, between a Persian bride and a Jewish groom, between a Chinese groom and an Australian bride. And for all of them and for all of you, Shefa Gold, Chance Encounters, C-S-C-H-A-N-T-S, Chance Encounters, the wedding song. Was Sheffagold, the CD Chance Encounter, C-H-A-N-T-S, and Baruch Haba Akala, the welcome song to the bride, also known as the wedding song, right here on the Radio Rabbi program. I am your radio rabbi, Rabbi Barbara Aiello, broadcasting to you from my mountaintop rabbi studio here in Italy. And of course, you are hearing us on AM 930 The Answer. So thank you all so much for listening. It's so good to have you with us today. And thanks to Sleep King of Sarasota for being our charter sponsor for 15 years. Go to my website, as I said, scroll down to Radio Rabbi, click on that microphone there, and then open up to the link to Sleep King. Why would you do that? Because there's some wonderful specials at Sleep King this time of year. Have the grandkids come home from summer camp, and now they're coming to visit Bubby and Zadie. I got twin beds in the guest room. I suggest Bubby, Zadie, each of you take a snooze, an afternoon nap on those guest beds. How do they feel? Sagging in the middle, maybe? Mattress a bit too thin? You've had them for 30 years. Well, before the grandkids get here, it might be a good idea to switch out those mattresses, and that's where Sleep King comes in. You can stop by at 1901 Hanson Street, right off Tamiami Trail, or you can give them a call at 941-922-5271, 941-922-5271, and find out about the wonderful memory foam mattresses and single bed size that you might want to use in the guest room so that your grandkids get a good night's sleep, and I guess that you do as well. I hope they're coming to visit. I know you're going to have a good time. And that goes for you and for Bubby and Zadie as well. Those mattresses that are over 15 years old are really heavy when you want to turn them upside down. You almost need someone to come in and do it for you, and that's because, I hate to tell you, they're full of dust mites, and it is time maybe to switch them out. Take a look at what Sleep King has on special. And as Steve Prophet, the owner and manager, says, The hybrid mattress is one of his best sellers. It offers memory foam and a box spring, the best of both worlds. But don't take my word for it. Stop by, wear comfortable clothes, bring your blankie, bring your pillow, bring your teddy too. And sleep experts say you need 8 to 10 minutes on a mattress to see if indeed it feels good to you and feels right, conforms to your body type. So give yourself time. The staff will certainly do that as well. And make sure you're getting that good night's sleep, because all aspects of health, the sleep experts say, are related to 7 to 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep. So Sleep King of Sarasota is waiting for you. And when you go, just let them know that you listen on the Radio Rabbi program. That would be something very, very nice. And I know Steve would be pleased not only to hear that, but he would be pleased to meet you as well. Thank you so much, Sleep King, for being a charter sponsor of the Radio Rabbi program. A regular feature here on the Radio Rabbi program is the Misha Berak prayer, the prayer for healing. And we pray for those who are ill and in need of refuah shlema, of complete healing of body, mind, and spirit. And I've been asked to mention for the Misha Berak prayer, Deborah, Sandy, Gloria, Bernie, Leanne, and James, Annie, Victoria, and Andrea, Dennis, Renee, and thank you, Kim, for sending me Baby Charlie and Senator John McCain as we listen to Debbie Friedman and the Misha Berak prayer. was the Misha Berak prayer sung by Debbie Friedman of blessed memory right here on the Radio Rabbi program. I am your radio rabbi, Rabbi Barbara Aiello. This is AM 930 The Answer, and I have a very interesting piece to share with you. It's called The Seven Secrets of Highly Successful Synagogues. Lenore Skenazi, she writes in the Jewish Forward, the newspaper which appears online and also in print, about Kurt Hoffman's Seven Secrets of Highly Successful Synagogues. Less than one-third of American Jews belong to a synagogue, according to the Pew Research Center study of 3,475 Jews. Did you get that? Less than one-third of American Jews belong to a synagogue. And while a third is nothing to sneeze at, it does leave plenty for the picking. But how? While some synagogues are bursting with everyone from babies to bubbies, it's no secret that others could use some new blood. Are there some surprising ideas for getting folks into synagogues that should be shared? Well, maybe. Well, Kurt Hoffman asked Jewish and Christian leaders and consultants for their best congregational aggregational trips. The broad conclusion? People want to be part of something. They long to be moved. They like to be surprised, and they love being fed. Once folks feel connected, they are yours. So reach out and try some of these wonderful ideas, and here they are. The Schlepping Point, little things make a difference in getting folks to shul. And the first one is called Huppah Huppah Hooray. Whenever a rabbi from North Shore Congregation Israel, a Reform synagogue in Highland Park, Illinois, marries a couple, the couple automatically receives a gift, 1 year's free membership. The biggest benefit is tickets to the High Holy Day services, says Drew Barkley, North Shore's executive director. But then they get the bulletin and they get our emails, and the young and not so young couples begin their married life in tandem with hearing about the synagogue, and the two intertwine. What's more, the synagogue deploys one of its rabbis to downtown Chicago to connect with young adults who have finished college and moved to the city for a spell. These young professionals eventually are going to get married and move back to the suburbs, Barkley said. So the rabbi is staying in touch with them. And then, of course, if the rabbi marries them, well, the circle begins anew. The takeaway? Grab potential members on the cusp of adulthood. The second? It's a big world. B'nai Jeshurun on Manhattan's Upper West Side is legendary, so popular, so zesty, so iconic. If it were food, it would be falafel. But if it were on your FM dial, it would probably be a college radio station at 2 a.m. They say, we are pretty committed to traditional forms of prayer, but within boundaries, we have done a lot of experiments and brought a lot of global Jewish music from all sorts of different parts of the world, from Hasidic to Iraq to Moroccan. Ronaldo Madelon is one of the three rabbis at what is called BJ. Along with global music come global instruments, and all those things add up to making things interesting and not predictable, says the rabbi. I think that one of the reasons for attracting people is that we always try to surprise, not for the sake of surprise, but for the sake of renewal. We have not always succeeded, but we try to keep ourselves fresh. The takeaway? Jews are from all over, and so is their music. Don't limit your repertoire. Do's, D-U-E-S, and don'ts. A year ago, Temple Beth Am, a Reform synagogue in Jupiter, Florida, had a membership of about 420 families. Now it's 500, and all it took was a simple experiment. The rabbi says, we just eliminated the concept of dues. As a 3-year pilot project, synagogue committed to not requiring any particular amount of money from anyone. This has not meant going broke. We're very honest with the community, telling them that we need money to operate, says the rabbi. At the same time, we said that we know that there are some who can give more and some less. And that's exactly what happened. Some give more than the sustaining amount, $1,000 per family. Some can't swing it. But doesn't knowing who paid what make a difference to the rabbi? Nope, says the rabbi. There's only one person at the synagogue who really knows what people give, and that's not me. The takeaway, eliminating dues can eliminate a big barrier for a lot of people. Number four says, so ask. At the Stanton Street Synagogue in Lower Manhattan, Rabbi Josh Uter says, we have our motto, all are welcome. That goes for questions, too. Though the synagogue's affiliation is Orthodox, the membership has a wide range of observance. We set it up so people are free to come as they are and engage as much as they want, and everything will be discussed. That's especially true during the part of the Shabbat morning service called Ask the Rabbi. The question can be about religious law, ethics, or current events as they relate to Judaism. The rabbi's favorite question, why do we have to listen to the rabbis when it was the rabbis who told us we have to listen to the rabbis? The takeaway, give congregants a chance to ask questions instead of just being lectured to. Number five, Good Shabbos, Nebraska. And this is the wildest idea of them all. At Beth Israel Synagogue in Omaha, an Orthodox congregation, Rabbi John Gross has replaced his pulpit with a desk. What's on that desk? A mug? What's behind him? A backdrop of the city. He's turned Saturday morning service into a late-night talk show, complete with an opening monologue, interviews, and two schoolgirls holding up an applause sign. It's phenomenal, says the rabbi. Until he did his first talk show service, which was just this past October, the congregation was getting 70 people. This past Shabbat, they had 250, and people love it. And what's more, his operating budget has gone from $5,000 to $75,000 in just 15 weeks. On stage, Rabbi Gross and guests discuss the week's Torah portion, but Gross makes sure his interview has a personal connection to it. For instance, to discuss Exodus, he invited Boris Gulko, a chess grandmaster, who talked about his experience trying to exit the Soviet Union. The takeaway? Consider different formats for the service. Really different. Number six, the third dinner's a charm. Romeinu is a Jewish renewal synagogue on Manhattan's Upper West Side. It's 6 years old and it has 500 families. What's its secret? Many shuls, people will come and join, find no way to contact and disappear. That's what the executive director said. Her synagogue deliberately creates connections by inviting all new members to participate in a three-night orientation program. Night one, go to someone's house, have dinner. Number two, you're invited to the rabbi's house for dinner, so you get to know him and the family. Night three, meet up at a Friday night service and have dinner afterwards with their coalescing cadre as well as longer-term members and staff. The point is to build smaller cohorts within a large and growing community. So instead of being faced with being a solo person or family in a large context, you begin to find groups. What's their takeaway? Newcomers will stay if they feel like they're part of the community. And the last, the way to a congregant's heart. Well, as a human being, a Jew, and a rather regular synagogue, the author says, allow me to make this final plea. Don't skimp on the food. When there's a nice kiddush after services, or at some synagogues before, like ours here in Italy, not only does it bring in people, but it also gives them a chance to schmooze. Breaking bread builds community just as surely as dinner at home binds a family. With stomachs rumbling, congregants flee to more welcoming spreads. Or at least, the author says, I know one who does, and I suspect I'm not alone. The takeaway, well, we may be the people of the book, a little lox never hurt either. Seven good ideas, seven secrets of a highly successful synagogue. Seven synagogues are doing so and doing it so very, very well. Tum balalaika. Do you like that? I know I do. Let's listen.
Wachsen und Regen, wo es kein Brennen.
Tumbalalaika. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed our program today. This is the Radio Rabbi program, and we are pluralistic in nature. Now, what do we mean by that? Are you Reform, Progressive, Orthodox, Reconstructionist, Conservative, Renewal, Humanistic, Ashkenazic, or Sephardic? Those are the cultural groups. Would you call yourself a cultural group? A cultural Jew, a secular, or even a gastronomical Jew? You know what? We're all part of the Mishpucha. We're part of a worldwide wonderful Jewish family. As we say to you, welcome home. This is Rabbi Barbara Aiello. I am your radio rabbi. We'll see you next week on AM 930, The Answer, FM 103.1, 93.7 as well. Shalom, everyone. See you then.
Shalom, chaverim. Shalom, chaverim. Shalom, chaverim. Shalom, chaverim.